back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum weed, I'm back in the saddle again. Riding the range once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night and the only law is right. Back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-o, rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-a, I go my way, back in the saddle again.
Tried any of that Jensen weed. I don't think I ever even seen it, but maybe I just didn't recognize it. That's all Gene Autry, but I want to tell you a secret about Gene Autry. According to my information, he was Jewish, a Jewish cowboy. I never cared for him in the movies. He'd sit up on that horse, he had a pot gut on him, and he'd plink on the guitar. He was not my idea of a cowboy. And he owned the Los Angeles Angels, didn't he? Professional baseball team. They ended up in Orange County, California. Yeah, I hear little bits and pieces about everything, but I don't know too much about anything. So that's the way it is. And today is... Wait a minute. This is Friday, Freya's Day. The 23rd. Of 2017, I mean, for June. Won't be long till we'll get into July for Julius Caesar. Of course, I told you June was named after a Roman god. Yeah, so since Julius Caesar was a god man, we'll have that coming up in July. Most of these months are named after Romans. That's good. That's really good. That's odd. I only get about one guy that sends in for a song for the ladies. They must not have any girlfriends or wives. And I haven't had, I don't remember any ladies asking for a song on Freya's Day. There's something wrong around here. Well, I see Sears and Roebuck, that old company, is closing 20 more stores. Before this is over, most department stores are going to be closed. It's going to be all internet commerce from here on in. Yeah. Incidentally, I grew up in a Sears Roebuck house. Yeah, way back in the early part of the last century, Sears and Roebuck sold houses, prefabricated houses. And so all my formative years were spent in prefab Sears Roebuck houses. I'm telling you, they were pretty cheap. Had a lot of cracks. And when the wind blew in the wintertime, we had to put bales of straw up around the house. Of course, a lot of that came through the foundation, but still. That house was not too secure. However, a tornado went through one time about three or four blocks from that house, and it didn't go down. It didn't go down. It didn't blow away. Sears is already closing up 245 stores. So now you're going to see all kinds of these shopping centers empty. And guess what's going to happen? Going to be more and more crime centers, gang activity, using empty, abandoned shopping centers. It's going to be interesting. I can't wait. So if you don't have a good shopping center that can survive, you better be happy if you've got a good, strong post office or internet service, because that's the way you'll be doing all your shopping from here on in, I'll tell you. Saw a movie once, a horror movie. It was really good. It was all the people that had turned into zombies kept going to the shopping center because that's the only thing they could think of in their brain. And so they just went to the shopping centers and kept just roaming around the shopping center. That was a funny movie. If you want to see Control, well, you'll see it now with all the commerce moving towards the internet. The system will, and the rich and the powerful have more and more control over your daily life. You notice road rage is getting worse and worse. People are getting pissed off about anything. And road rage, especially in the big cities, but also out in the countryside too. That mealy-mouthed Attorney General Jeff Sessions now says, he's going to announce a new plan Tuesday in which 12 cities will receive more federal manpower to combat violence in their cities. That'll give them an excuse to hire more Negroes as cops or whatever, and more Mexicans, give them jobs. Their problem is not needing more cops in the city. They just need the right kind of cops, like the old days. However, I have very mixed emotions about that, too. He said, turning back the recent troubling increase in violent nigger crime in our country is a top priority of the Department of Justice, just us, and the Trump administration, Sieg Heil, as we work to fulfill the president's promise to make America safe again. America's never going to be safe again. Take it to the bank. Sessions said at the beginning of the Justice Department two-day summit on crime reduction. They got the wrong name on that. The first round of cities chosen for the new initiative, the National Public Safety Partnership, are Baton Rouge, Louisiana. God, that used to be a beautiful town. Some of the most beautiful women I ever saw were in Baton Rouge back in the 70s. Birmingham, Alabama. Buffalo, New York, Cincinnati, Houston, Indianapolis, Jackson, Tennessee, Kansas City, Missouri, Lansing, Michigan, Memphis, Tennessee, Springfield, Illinois, and Toledo, Ohio. Chicken shit, you're afraid to go into Chicago, aren't you? Afraid to go into Newark and places like that. You're going to try out these smaller cities out in the boonies where there's a few more whites. Yeah, I know what you're up to. It's all just nonsense. Nonsense. Quote, our nation's violent crime, nigger crime, and mestizo crime rate is rising, unquote, Sessions said. I don't need no little fart from Mississippi to tell me that. In many of our urban areas, this increase is staggering. Why do I need a little fart like him to tell me this? Why does any working person, white person, or even a black person, need Sessions to tell him that the crime rate is rising? Baltimore and Chicago, two large cities where violent crime is increasing, were notably not on the list. They're afraid of the black KKK. They're petrified of the black KKK. So that black KKK is doing some good there. Yeah. Justice Department spokesman Ian Pryor said the department is anticipating that more cities will be added later in the year if we get to them before they burn down. He said the department is considering reallocating prosecutors to Chicago. Prosecutors to Chicago. You don't need prosecutors, you need heavy-duty cops or military. Prosecutors aren't going to change anything. To Chicago, and has already sent more than 20 additional agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. 20 agents in Chicago? That's a drop in the bucket, man. The 12 chosen cities will not receive more money from the Justice Department, but the department will send agency employees and experts, I like that, experts, to work with them to develop strategies and tactics to best fight violent crime. Sessions said, you know, don't you get tired of hearing this bullshit? You know it's bullshit. It's always bullshit. Sessions was joined by the heads of the FBI, famous but incompetent, ATF, always terrible and fucked up, and the Drug Enforcement Administration, as well as the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, Mr. Jew, who praised law enforcement officials in the audience for the risks they take to protect the public. Quote, the Attorney General and I understand that every time you pull a vehicle over, execute a search warrant, or step out of your uniform, you are faced with a potential fatal situation. Well, how did that get that way? How did it get that way? By coddling these people, coddling the black boys, coddling the mestizo boys, and even coddling a lot of white people who are not fit to call themselves white. Well, that's enough of that nonsense. You know it's nonsense. They get up there and they say, you know, that reminds me of that one thing I've got on my recorder.
Every piece of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand in the rain and say, shit, it's raining!
And that's it. They get up there in Washington on their high horse and sit there in the congressional halls in their $1,000 suits and sit up there and say, oh, things are terrible. We got to do something. Who caused it? Most of it's caused by them. Are you kidding? It's all bullshit. I like that one. Let's hear that one again.
Every piece of this is man's bullshit. They call this war a cloud over the land, but they made the weather, and then they stand in the rain and say, shit, it's raining!
Yeah. That's what Jeff Sessions does. He sits up there and all those politicians have laid the groundwork for all this bullshit. And he says, shit, it's raining. We got to do something. We're going to send 5 guys out there to Chicago. They'll straighten it out. Oh, a few more prosecutors, too. And since Session parades around as pretending to be a conservative, all the following the stupid people in the right wing and the conservative movement will believe him. They'll believe him. He's going to really fight it. And if it's the other way around and it's the Democrat Party, they'll believe theirs too. Oh yeah, he's gonna take care of it. Gonna give everybody food and houses and free education. Everything's gonna be free in the great day up yonder. Can you believe they're still whining about this Jewish delicatessen in Chicago that somebody scrawled with a felt pen on their sidewalk out front? Free Gaza or something like that. That's going around the world. All you need is a felt pen. If you're a Jew, all you need is a felt pen. And you put something down and away it goes. Round the world, round and round it goes. Personally, I'd be ashamed to be a Jew. For other reasons, too. You know, there are some tough Jews around. I'm sure that they chagrins them quite a bit about this kind of crap. Even Herb Rubin was a stand-up fighter guy, you know. Chicago, Chicago, what a wonderful town.
Urgent request for better security on the lakefront. More police, more cameras, more lights. It's summer. People are streaming to the lakefront to enjoy themselves. But one alderman tonight says there's not enough security. NBC5's Natalie Martinez is live with much more. Natalie?
Run for your lives.
Allison, he does want more, and he's willing to put his aldermanic money where his mouth is. He wants this unusual Streeterville crime and this violent crime to get under control and to do so before summer gets into full swing. With high-end hotels and attractions, Streeterville is one of, if not the, tourist destination neighborhood in Chicago. But with the recent shootings along the lakefront near Millennium Park, the 42nd Ward Alderman is making a critical request. First, he wants to make sure gates are locked at the Ohio Street Underpass and others between midnight and 6 a.m. in the warm weather months.
The idea here is close those off and make it easier for the police to monitor fewer locations late at night.
When I was walking through here, I was thinking I wouldn't want to be here at night, especially by myself.
No, I want them open.
Okay.
I have a dog. We take them for walks at night. I think you're going to trap people on the beach if they're trying to get away.
I would just push the problem to in another location.
Alderman Riley also wants more lights, cameras, and police visibility in the area along the Riverwalk and Lakefront Trail, especially on the weekends. He's willing to help pay for some of it with more than $1 million aldermanic dollars.
I will spend money on installing cameras and improving lighting with the advice of CPD, the emergency management folks, and the Department of Transportation.
This on the heels of a deadly Father's Day shooting here on Ohio at Lakeshore, where a 25-year-old woman was killed.
It sounds like a pretty effective solution to me, a couple cameras and more security.
CDOT tells me crews are out tonight surveying the lighting. OEMC says it's working on the request as well. The alderman does expect to have the green light from the mayor and have this deal done by Friday. In addition, police always say if you want to be safe, you should walk in groups in well-lit areas and don't use earbuds. We're live at 500 East Ohio. Natalie Martinez, NBC5 News.
Natalie, thank you.
There you go. Who's afraid of the big black KKK, man? Yeah, you all you white people come down there to the beach in the dark of the night. We'll have a few more cameras there and maybe a few more police. You'll be all right. You'll be all right. Yeah, not. Of course, all that is whitewash, eyewash for the more wealthy people, upper middle class that hang out down there. And so they've got to make them, those people safe, feel safe, even though nobody's safe in Chicago. Chicago, my wonderful town. My poor mother used to work at one time in Chicago in the bus station. Boy, I'll tell you, you wouldn't want to work there now.
It's Choke Point, Chicago gangs and Mexican cartels as partners in crime. Investigative reporter Chuck Gowdy tonight with new insight about what's causing the surge of shootings and murders in the city.
Where Mexican drug cartels and Chicago gangs come together is what law enforcement calls the choke point. Those relationships drive violence in Chicago. And tonight, local and federal law enforcement officials are trying to figure out how they can reduce the pressure and stop the shootings and homicides. Someone is shot in Chicago on average every 2.5 hours. The murder rate is moving along at the same record-setting pace as last year.
A lot of the shootings and the homicides are social media driven over some kind of altercation. Somebody said something about somebody else. Much like the violence and the shootings, the drug game, everything changes and it evolves and adapts.
The head of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration in Chicago tells the I-Team that a decade ago, the shootings and murders were over drug turf. How crime evolves here is studied by the DEA, FBI, and Chicago Police Department. This joint intelligence report was recently released to highlight some of the issues plaguing Chicago.
We have about 100,000 gang members in the city of Chicago. Most of their profits, most of their work comes from the distribution of drugs on the street level.
With the world's most notorious drug lord, Joaquin El Chapo Guzman, back behind bars, the landscape is changing for the Mexican cartels and their operations in Chicago.
Sinaloa in Chicago specifically, I think, has been the primary cartel that we see here, but I think we've seen many other cartels starting to get a foothold here as well. You have New Generation, who's an extremely violent cartel. It's become increasingly more violent since Chapo's arrest and maybe somewhat of a breakdown of the Sinaloa cartel.
Raspan says the cartels are jockeying for territory.
You have the Mexican cartel representatives. They'll send a cell head up here. We call them cell heads, person to oversee cartel operations in the city. They forge a relationship with higher-ranking gang members. We call it the choke point.
That strong relationship between the city's gangsters and Mexican drug cartel members fuels violence on the south and west sides. This latest joint report says the spike in shootings and homicides was sudden and sustained, but the cause of the increase in violence is unclear. The analysis does show gang-related violence tends to go up on anniversary dates celebrated by respective gangs and on the days of gang funerals. Contrary to popular belief, weather is not thought to have played a big role in the increase in homicides last year, more than 760. A major challenge for law enforcement, gangs in Chicago are unorganized and fragmented, lack strong leadership, an estimated 600 different gang factions.
There's just not that structured, hierarchical kind of gang formations now. It's really loose affiliations. That's, I think, the biggest change that we've seen.
Even though there was a 44% drop in drug arrests by Chicago police from 2015 to 16, the DEA says it remains focused on breaking up the command and control of the various gangs, aiming to get as much heroin and fentanyl as possible off the streets until the next hot drug comes along.
Our drug threat is going to change in the next couple years, probably here in Chicago. So, to me, it's just how crime changes.
The joint agency study states the obvious. There is no simple solution to Chicago's crime problem. Law enforcement says reducing violence requires a long-term approach that includes input from police, public health, crime scholars, and community organizations.
Very loose. Do they mean that's lone wolves running around Chicago? Or is it the black KKK or the KKK or Sinaloa cartel, man. And I noticed the cops in this video, a lot of cops going into houses and stuff. Most of them are overweight. Now, how are they going to be too effective against these young guys, slim and trim, the black guys? They couldn't chase anything, man. Oh, yeah, Chicago. How long is it going to be till this breaks into all-out warfare, you know? These people and these gangs, it's guerrilla warfare. Don't you realize we're on the stepping stones of internal civil war starting in the big cities? We're getting closer and closer. This summer it may increase a lot more. So watch that KKK, black KKK, because they're going to town, man. Well, after a 24-hour lull in the shootings in Chicago, four people were killed and at least seven others were wounded in Chicago Tuesday night through early Wednesday, according to police. The latest shooting occurred on the Chicago Skyway when a man and a woman died in an apparent murder-suicide around 4:15 a.m. Well, they're just so despondent over the Chicago's crime rate, they committed suicide to add to the crime rate. Yeah.
Illinois. Here's a plan. Dissolve Illinois. Decommission the state, tear up the charter, whatever the legal mumbo-jumbo is, and just end the whole dang thing. Our Illinois, our beloved Illinois, has proven it just doesn't deserve to live. So why not let our friendly neighbors, Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri, and Kentucky, just take the parts they want? Going to have Chicago and start calling it South Milwaukee. Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, will oppose this because he needs a job. And he's going to beg his friends on the big Eastern newspapers to write angry editorials and save him. So how about if we have 40 acres carved out surrounding the mayor's home in Chicago and make Rahm the prince of his own country, Ramonia. Cook County Board Preckwinkle will scream too, so let's give her something. A grant of land as large as a case of soda pop. You know, the soda pop she taxes. So she might stand on it and look down and proclaim herself the queen of Tex Winkletopia. We could make it like a lawless federal territory, a wilderness where the strong survive and the peasants need. Name of that wasteland already. It's Madaganistan. But in return for taking care of our politicians, the other states who are going to carve up Illinois will probably demand assets. Wisconsin will want the Milwaukee Cubs, the Beloit Blackhawks, the Sheboygan Bulls, and the Fond du Lac Bears. And Indiana can carve a big curving slice of the former Illinois, so their state will be shaped like a basketball, and that will please Hoosiers to no end. And Indiana also gets the Indianapolis White Sox and Indianapolis Fire. And Iowa can have the western parts, Missouri can have a piece, and Kentucky can have southern Illinois, since many of our, on our side of the border, share Kentucky DNA, just like Abraham Lincoln did. Now, some people don't like this idea, but remember this. Beggars can't be choosers. If we dissolve Illinois as planned, we won't have a say in anything. And besides, Kentucky does have excellent bourbon.
There's a man with a plan, man. I like that guy. Yeah, let's dissolve Illinois. And you'd be infected all the other states around it. Of course, they're already infected anyhow. Gary in northwest Indiana is Niggerville, too. Indianapolis is Niggerville. They're all, every place is infected. And then they're bringing all the ragheads into Wisconsin and Minnesota. You get the new religion up there. Gonna get that new religion, baby. That's gonna really help you out. Here's another. Illinois is like Venezuela now, a fiscally broken state that has lost its will to live, although for the moment we still have enough toilet paper. But before we run out of essentials, let's finally admit that after a decade upon decade of taxing and spending and borrowing and loading the state with more and more niggers, Illinois has finally run out of other people's money and patience. Boys and girls, these are good signs. I see good signs everywhere. While the conservative right wing weep and the liberals and progressives weep, I cheer it on, baby, because we have to do this. This has to happen before anything decent might happen. Goes on to say those other people include taxpayers who've abandoned the state. And I hear a lot of it here in California, too. Everybody's fleeing something. And now Illinois faces doomsday. So as the politicians meet in Springfield this week for another round of posturing and gesturing and blaming, we need a plan, baby. Here it is. Dissolve the state. Get rid of it. Parcel it out. Have a garage sale. Well, let's get our white ass out of Chicago for a change and look into another little situation we've got here. The secret of the hidden hand. Some behind the scenes, the ADL manipulations revealed by a man who knows. And this was from the American Mercury way back there. Let's see, when was it published? Well, I don't see it now, but anyhow, it was quite a while back, because the magazine hasn't been published in 40 years. The most closely guarded secret of the B'nai B'rith is the way it exercises control over its membership and forces recalcitrant Jews back into the fold. Contrary to popular impression, this Jewish religious fraternal order is not just one big happy family. Despite the facade of unity and goodwill, in the shadows behind the scenes, there are seething personal jealousies, bitter rivalries, spying and counter-spying in the covert, vicious struggle for power, and dominance in the broad spectrum of organized Jewry. That's why I say the whole German experience with the Jews in World War II is suspect. I believe, like I said, that the Zionists wanted to punish the more peaceful, moderate Jews in Germany and force them back into the fold. Anyhow, I'm not going to go into that today, but anyhow, like their desert cousins, the Arabs, the Jews naturally, competitive instincts and wits have been sharpened by squatting in the marketplace for generations, haggling, bartering, cheating. Hence, even in moments of great crisis, it is not easy to induce the Jews to work together in a closely coordinated and highly efficient manner. I've said this all along. People who say that the Jews are so tightly knit together is false. While they may be in thorough agreement on objects, many stubbornly defiant Jews are prone to go off on a tangent and prematurely strike against the common enemy on their own instead of waiting orders from the high command. These impetuous acts have frequently proved embarrassing to the top strategists who have worked out an overall plan of operation. Even in the decades of the 30s, when European Jews were in mortal terror of Adolf Hitler and all the Jews in the world united against the Third Reich, there was constant bickering and infighting among the Jews. Well, that even got to the point where the ships were not allowed to take the Jews over to Israel. The Jews around Roosevelt didn't want that to happen. They made excuses. Panic-stricken Jews even accused their rabbis of ineptitude and denounced Jewish financiers for not kicking in enough money for the counteroffensive against Hitler. In the United States, the B'nai B'rith was in the vanguard to push the U.S. into war. Quote, to unite persons of Jewish faith in the work of promoting their highest interest, unquote, is the stated objective in the preamble of the charter of the B'nai B'rith International Council. In order to maintain its rigid disciplinary control, the B'nai B'rith set up its own Gestapo. It was headquartered in Chicago and was known by the innocuous title of Research Unit. It was headed by Miles Goldberg, a squat, bald-headed, icy little character who was as ruthless as his counter-number, Heinrich Himmler. By 1940, B'nai B'rith had an annual budget of $50 million. Its subsidiary, the Anti-Defamation League, carried on a massive campaign of vilification against isolationist members of Congress and engaged in clandestine sabotage, espionage, mayhem, and dirty tricks against American nationalist groups who were fighting communism, Jewish communism. The ADL subsidized political candidates for public office, from dog catcher to U.S. senator. The ADL set up local chapters in every city of 20,000 or more. It set up advertising boycotts against every newspaper with a nationalist editorial policy. Most publishers, frightened by the loss of advertising revenue, bowed in meek submission to the ADL. But in one instance, the boycott boomeranged. The Jewish merchants in Washington, D.C. cut their advertising in the Washington Times Herald 50% because of the non-interventionist policy of the paper. Mrs. Eleanor Patterson, wealthy owner of the Times Herald, summoned to her office all the Jewish merchants and Rabbi Paul Rickman, director of the ADL. Mrs. Patterson announced, "I have spent a great deal of money and effort in collecting evidence about the vicious undercover activities of the ADL. I have decided to cut out all advertising in my paper and convert it into a tabloid and write the truth about you Jews." Choking with emotion, Rabbi Rickman pleadingly remonstrated against this projected rash action by Mrs. Patterson. He promised that he would stop the advertising boycott and restore full advertising in her paper if she would not expose the ADL. Mrs. Patterson agreed, but she continued to run the editorials against U.S. intervention in European war. Unfortunately, Mrs. Patterson was the only American publisher with the courage to stand up against the formidable power of B'nai B'rith during this critical period. Virtually all the communication media were mobilized in a pro-war campaign by the B'nai B'rith. Phony front organizations were set up, including Friends of Democracy, which was operated by the Reverend Leon Burkhead and his son Kenneth M. Burkhead, the Christian Defender, published by George Pagnanelli, and Market Analyst, published by Sanford Griffith, and the National Gentile League, headed by Donald Shea, who was unknowingly subsidized by the ADL. See, false flag. See, that's the name of the game. All of these organizations were owned and operated by undercover agents of the B'nai B'rith, with a single exception of the National Gentile League, which was operated by Don Shea, a sincere crackpot who was anonymously subsidized by the ADL. Shea had applied for a patent for an axe handle, which he called a kike killer. Rabbi Rickman, ADL director, decided it would be a good propaganda gimmick to keep Shea in whiskey and funds. Shea was frequently castigated by Walter Winchell, Drew Pearson, and Harold L. Ickes, Secretary of Interior. They all knew that Shea was a joke, but they built him up as a Nazi menace who was organizing secret SS squads to kill Jews in 60 large cities. False flag again. Of the U.S., they also used Shea as a tar brush to smear sincere patriots who were opposing communism. Rabbi Rickman was so delighted with Shea's flamboyant anti-Semitic activities that he said he would like to meet Shea and shake his hands. See how the Jews will use so-called anti-Jew people to foment their program? To add publicity mileage, the ADL arranged through Lieutenant General Hugh Drummond, commander of the Eastern Coast Defense Command, to have Shea relocated from Washington to Chicago, presumably to prevent him from sabotaging the Eastern Continental Military Defense. Shea's wife worked for the Social Security Board in Washington. The SSB obligingly transferred her to its Chicago field office. A Jewish dentist employed on a contract basis by the Federal Relocation Authority fixed Mr. Shea's teeth at the taxpayer's expense, of course. The relocation authority also paid Shea a small monthly stipend after he was relocated in Chicago, having been forcibly removed from his regular place of employment. He continued to receive his sub rosa donations from the Anti-Defamation League so he could pursue his anti-Jewish activities, which consisted of writing insulting letters to prominent Jews and occasional speeches in the parks. Rabbi Rickman's undercover agents spied on non-interventionist members of Congress and leaked stories to the press about their secret links with pro-Nazi subversives. He instigated harassing investigations by carrying the trumped-up charges against prominent patriots to his pal Alex Rosen, FBI Assistant Director in charge of the Domestic Intelligence Division, FBI. One of Rabbi Rickman's stool pigeons in the Office of War Information, David Katz, alias Carr, was forced to resign when the House Un-American Activities Committee exposed the fact that Katz had formerly been a byline writer for the Communist Daily Worker. The rabbi promptly got Katz a job as an assistant to gutter communist columnist Drew Pearson. I've got a book about Drew Pearson, The All-American Louse. Rickman also got Pearson to employ another one of his agents, Andy Older, who was later exposed as a member of the Washington Communist newspaper cell. When Pearson's friends in the Justice Department tipped him off that Older's FBI file had leaked to the House Un-American Activities Committee, and that Older was in imminent danger of being exposed, Pearson asked Older to either resign or give up his Communist Party affiliations. Older resigned. Later, Older framed J. Parnell Thomas, chairman of the Un-American Activities Committee, on a phony kickback charge. He got Pearson to run an expose and demand prosecution. Thomas was convicted and sentenced to serve a year in prison. Rabbi Rickman was so jealous in carrying out his devious undercover projects that he ran into open conflict with the undercover activities of Jewish Gestapo chief Miles Goldberg, who had Rickman summoned before the Council of the B'nai B'rith and charged with interfering with operations of the overall plan. Rickman was chastised and ordered to clear through proper channels in investigating federal investigations and prosecutions. The rabbi was an eager beaver who wanted to put everybody in jail, including Colonel Robert R. McCormick, publisher of the Chicago Tribune. But the rabbi's federal grand jury probe of McCormick had boomeranged. Despite the severe reprimand, Richman continued his covert schemes. Finally, the B'nai B'rith had to put a top man in Washington to control all the far-flung activities. His name was Frank Prince, who had been a big-time racketeer in Chicago during the bootlegging era. Prince had once been charged with murdering his wife, among other things. Prince leased a spacious mansion in the secluded area next to Rock Creek Park. Here, nightly conferences were held, attended by important Jews both in and out of government. Prince's personal bodyguards roamed the secluded area to make sure there were no surveillance except their own. On one occasion, Frank Prince remarked, "That damn fool Rabbi Rickman would mess us up if I didn't keep my heel on his neck all the time. We can't fire him because he has a big following among little dumb Jews," unquote. Rickman, however, attained one singular achievement, therefore. He pulled the strings to get his friend, Dr. Albert Einstein, a secret interview with FDR. Einstein persuaded Roosevelt to spend $1 billion to develop the atomic bomb for the purpose of utterly destroying Germany. Later, both Rickman and Einstein regretted their promotion of the atomic bomb when Germany capitulated before it could be annihilated. And that's the end of that article. Pretty interesting. I got a lot of that stuff. Lots of that stuff you should hear. And a lot of this stuff is already up on our website. So it gives you an idea how badly the right wing and left wing are infiltrated by Jews and how the Jews fight among themselves. So when you see that happen, when they say, well, look at there, they're fighting. This Jew is fighting that Jew. They're not fighting because they're coming over to your side. No way, baby. So that's it for that today. And I think I'm going to cut it off because I'm losing my voice for some reason. And relax a little bit. So I'll see you Monday, okay? Moon's Day. And have a nice ladies' day the rest of the day, all you lone wolf ladies. And guys, take your gal out to dinner or something, to a movie. Be nice. Later, boys and girls. And always remember, things are not necessarily the way they seem. In any great mystery, you start tugging on a string, and sooner or later that ball of string is going to come undone. Like I say, the whole H word, the whole deal with the Jews in Germany and so forth, the real story has not been told yet.
One with mercy, he was dead before he hit the floor. Who is he? Special Agent Terrence McGraw, Counterintelligence Unit out of Chicago, on special assignment for me. You ever hear of the group? No. They're a right-wing extremist cell. Not your usual anti-government fringe types. They've got deep pockets and influence. McGraw was getting close to revealing their leadership when he was taken out. The only member we've been able to get a visual on is this guy. It was by the name of Radesky. McGraw had him pegged as the group's spotter in charge of recruitment. And they can afford the best, mostly freelancers. A combination of ex-CIA and DOD operatives and hitmen.
So what do they want?
Same as any terrorist group. Power. To what end, we don't know. What we do know is, before McGraw was killed, he uncovered a plot to assassinate Senator Joseph Kaifman.
That's the guy running for president.
The one who will be president, if you believe the polls. Why Kaifman? McGraw couldn't provide any more details.
So what's your next move?
Nothing. I'm calling off the investigation. Come again?
That's right. As of today, the FBI is no longer investigating the group.
Okay, I don't get it.
You got a major conspiracy beef here, not to mention a dead agent, and what, you want to back off?
Officially, yes. Unofficially. There's a reason why McGraw's cover was blown. He was betrayed by someone in the bureau.
What, like a mole?
I could be wrong. I hope I am. But if I'm not, there's no one I can trust anymore. Except you. I trust you because I knew your father.